All of this has much deeper roots. It's worth remembering that this has roots deep in American history, and it's useful to think about them, because in some ways, fundamental principles haven't changed a lot in a couple hundred years. It's worth remembering the principles on which the country was founded. Now, the United States is an unusual country. Most countries kind of grew out of existing institutions. So in Europe, for example, you know, the systems that developed grew out of the feudal system and the church and all kind of other stuff that stayed around with its lingering effects. And incidentally, one of the reasons why Europe has support systems and welfare systems and so on is because of the deeply reactionary character of the institutions that remained, like the feudal system and the church. Remember, they were pre-capitalist, and they were based on the idea that people had a right to live, maybe a rotten place, but some place. They had a place in society, and they deserved it, and they had to be maintained there. And that's a pre-capitalist idea. In fact, what's now called neoliberal economics, really classical economics, is based on the principle that people don't have a right to live. You go back to the origins, you know, David Ricardo and Malthus and those guys. Their big point was to try to convince people that you do not have a right to live. You hurt the poor by helping them. And the idea that you have a right to live is just a mistake, has to be beaten out of people's minds. The only right that you have is whatever rights you get on the labor market. If you can get enough to survive on the labor market, fine. If not, as they put it, go somewhere else. You have no right to be here. Well, you know, back in the 1820s, when they were talking about this stuff, you could go somewhere else. Like, you could go to places like this, where, you know, the land was being cleared of the plague that was in the way, and as soon as you exterminated those people and kicked them out, then you had a place to go. Same with Australia. Well, now you don't have a place to go anymore, but you still don't have a right to live. It's important to recognize that. You go somewhere else, and maybe it'll be jail or, you know, something, but anyhow, you have no right to live. Well, these pre-capitalist ideas, which you get in people like Adam Smith and so on, they remained in elsewhere. And they're part of the basis for the kinds of support systems that we don't have. But the United States was different. It was created. You know, it's kind of like a blank slate. You know, it's the one country that was almost constructed from almost nothing. And we know how it was constructed, and it's quite interesting. You go back to the Constitutional Convention, where the dominant voice was James Madison, the main framer of the Constitution. And this does not come out very clearly in the stuff that you read in college, like the Federalist Papers, which was presented for the public, so it's kind of watered down. But if you go back to the Constitutional Convention debates, they're very clear. Madison makes clear that the prime responsibility of government and the framework of the new government that's being established, the prime responsibility of government, he says, is to protect the minority of the opulent against the majority. That's the prime responsibility. Then they're secondary things. But you've got to protect the minority, the opulent, against the majority. Madison warned of what he called the danger of the leveling spirit among the growing numbers of people who labor under all the hardships of life and secretly sigh for a more equal distribution of its blessings. Now, that's a big danger. And if you let that danger be realized in the new system, it's going to threaten the minority of the opulent, and they have to be protected. So therefore, democracy is unacceptable. That was the primary principle on which the Constitution was designed and on which the system was designed, and very explicit. Democracy is unacceptable because of this leveling spirit among the people who labor under all the hardships of life and sigh for a more equal distribution of its blessings. And if you give them a chance to do anything about it, you're going to threaten the minority of the opulent. And he used England as that was the obvious example. That was the model for everyone. He said in England, if they allowed democracy, then people would, the mass of the population would vote for what we now call agrarian reform. That is, they would call for breaking up the big landed estates, and it would threaten the minority of the opulent. And obviously that's an intolerable idea, as intolerable as, you know, today in Guatemala or something like that. So therefore, we got to make sure that there's no democratic system. And Madison totally carried the day. The only dissenting voice in the Constitutional Convention was James Wilson, and he was smashed. Jefferson wasn't part of this, remember. He was a real Democrat, so he was out of the whole planning. And that's the way the system was designed. It was very carefully designed to satisfy the Madisonian principle that wealth must rule, because, as he put it, the wealthy are a better class of men, and therefore they must rule, and beside they own the country anyhow, so therefore they have a responsibility and a right, and the minority, the opulent, must be protected. All of this is clear, explicit, and interestingly, it doesn't change.